This is Peace Talks Radio, the series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. Whether it's the search for inner peace or learning how to resolve conflicts we have with others in our families, workplaces, communities, or between nations, we consider it here on Peace Talks Radio. I'm series producer Paul Ingalls. What can you do to promote peace? You may say you value a more peaceful world, but you're busy, and what could really make a difference anyway? Well, if you've thought about such questions even a little bit, James O'Dea would like to talk to you. He'd like you to consider some online training that would certify you as a peace ambassador and empower you to learn for yourself how you could translate skills you already have into some action that might contribute to a shift to a more peaceful world. James O'Dea has a little head start on most of us in terms of working for social justice and higher peace consciousness. He was the top Washington, D.C. official with Amnesty International for many years, and also a past president of the Institute of Noetic Sciences. More recently, he's been writing books like Creative Stress and Cultivating Peace, and speaking on the social healing circuit. Lately, he's been offering a 16-week online training program called Becoming a Peace Ambassador. Later in the program, we'll meet two people who've taken the training and find out what they've done with it. First, though, we welcome James O'Dea to the studios of Peace Talks Radio. Welcome, James.
Thank you. It's so good to be with you.
At your talks, what part of your message do you hear back from people that inspires them most to think of themselves as peace ambassadors who can make a difference?
The sense that we have moved the peace movement in a whole new direction, and that it's not your father's peace movement or your mother's peace movement. Everyone can participate within their own context as teachers, as students, as social workers, as psychologists. So we're no longer screaming at the gates, in a sense. We've breached the walls and we're now working inside the system, so that the big theme is how do we create a culture of peace and how do we do that from the inside out.
You actually have a document online that I've seen, a multi-point document that reads something like a pledge of commitment to what it'll take for an individual to truly become a peace ambassador. What are just some of the most important personal statements in that document that you'd like to see people embrace?
That I am moving from one concept of reality to another. So the whole document, I Am a Peace Ambassador, is about the movement away from finger-pointing, judgmental polarization into working inside solutions. It is the movement that says, let's look at the problems and the root causes of those problems from a systemic point of view, and give as much insight as we can into those problems, but hold our best energy for the solutions, move towards those creative solutions. So the challenge is not to have the problem eat away at your energy system. And now we're sophisticated enough to look at our energy system in a way that even I, earlier in my Amnesty International years, didn't do self-care. I burnt out. You know, I was filled with moral outrage and righteousness. And that modality is what we're talking about changing, moving away from that kind of activism to a new activism sourced in this inner wisdom process and outer creative social action, and that does require the ability to speak truth to power. We're not leaving those big issues behind. We're reframing them in a new way.
It still sounds like a tall order when you say do this culture-wide. Where does it start?
Well, where does it end is a better question, and we can get back to where does it start, because unless you have a vision, you will be wandering around reframing your approach to this and that problem. So every great peacemaker and leader starts with that vision. Wilberforce started with the vision of the end of slavery, the abolition of slavery. And there were many tactical ways that he had to, you know, change strategy and tactics, but he held the vision. So I hold a vision that's an extraordinarily large vision about peace on earth, and I say there are ways to begin with it. And so that's the end goal. It is peace on earth. It is that large. It is tackling the deep cynicism that obstructs that. But here's how we do it. We begin with looking at where our own issues are transmitted to others, because the intergenerational transmission of wounding is the singular cause of violence to the next generation. And we all get wounded. You know, if you look, I did a workshop recently, 30 out of 40 people had had some kind of sexual molestation or serious sexual abuse as children. That wound, if that wound is transmitted to the next generation, you have other cycles of perpetration and violence. But what was very heartening to me was, admittedly, they were coming to a workshop I'd convened on peace and healing, but these were people who are consciously interrupting that wounding. Now take that to scale. Now imagine how we look at all of the strategies and tactics to interrupt the transmission of violent wounding and perpetration on planet Earth, and what will arise in humanity in the absence of those forms of perpetration. Wave after wave of consciousness, I think, is growing in the so-called average person.
This sounds to me like that metaphor that is referred to from time to time when you get your instructions on the airplane to put your mask on first before you help others. It sounds like what you're saying is that our bodies, our energies, in some ways, it's all we have. And if we lose sight of our capacity to apply all that we have, then we are helpless. Then we are not able to help with the shift, to help those that we love.
Indeed, our bodies are instruments, I think, of a profound level of connected consciousness. And so even as you sit there, your body is leaking all kinds of information to me. If I am aware of that, I can pick up some of those signals. But, you know, our internal reality is always expressing itself through the body in many, many ways. That, you know, the research now that shows the slightest eye movements in couples that Daniel Goleman wrote about in Emotional Intelligence that suggests that they can pick up disdain or superiority leaking through this very little flickers of the eyes. And they say, well, that's probably going to be a 3-year marriage or whatever. So I mean, that's the, if you like, that's one way of looking at it. The other way is that, in fact, then we are designed in some ways to connect with each other, that deep, compassionate listening is a highly active peacemaking strategy, because what it does is if I listen deeply with a heart-centered awareness to you, I calm the amygdala in the middle of your brain, that part of your brain that says fight, flight, worry. And the amygdala is connected to long-term memory, so that fight, flight gets imprinted there. Mm-hmm. And you come along and you listen to me, and I say to you, tell me your experience of what happened to you during that period of conflict. And finally, you can begin to open and release that in a context that's peaceful. So now this new science is so helpful to us in peacemaking, because it's telling us, how do you create a field of limbic resonance with the other people? How do you activate the deep heart's core so that your heart has an electromagnetic field of coherence that is going to help the other person enter the state of being that you are in? This is profound, I think, in terms of how, when I talk about really scaling up peacemaking on a planetary level, these are things that can be taught in school. In fact, the Institute of Heart Math and groups like that are beginning to teach these practices in school. And what we know is that heart-centered work and empathy, curricula influence the whole educational system, in the whole intellectual cognitive capacities of children who practice it.
Mm-hmm. James O'Dea is our guest. The Peace Ambassador training through the SHIFT Network is 13 weeks, $750 or so. I'm sure in a weak economy that feels out of reach to some people. And
it's actually 16 weeks.
Ah, even better deal per session. Okay, yes. Pardon me.
And in the current program, there are about 160 people. About 40 of those have some level of scholarship. Lots of scholarships to people in the developing world, youth leader in Nepal who's taking it and so on. So there's a tremendous effort to bring in the people who really want to be there but can't afford to be there, and at the same time to have a fee base that helps support something as staffed up as it needs to be in the SHIFT network. So I think it's a good combination.
But in general, outside of that outreach, do you wrestle with the idea of trying to get this way of thinking out in parts of the American population even that aren't used to considering this or take a cynical attitude about it or throw it in a basket with New Age thinking or singing Kumbaya or whatever they want to do to stigmatize it?
I don't fundamentally believe that the missionary approach works, that there is a call here, there is a call for those who resonate with it, and that it's building up that energy field of those who really are connecting and resonating with this work. I don't think you can preach to the cynic. The cynic is one who says, whose sense of hope has collapsed, whose sense of possibility has collapsed, whose sense of control requires them not to breathe in too many ideals. And I don't think you can talk to that. In a missionary sense, because it will only contract more. That's really working inside the energy of the problem. What you have to do is create a field where there is so much energy in that field that people are attracted to it. Let them have their belief. But what you can do is show that there is a plurality of belief. Let them see that there are other beliefs and open the possibility for them to experience some of those other beliefs.
But then at the end, as a practical matter, at the end of a Peace Ambassador training, what is the final invitation or challenge to the students that have taken those 16 weeks?
We've completed one Peace Ambassador training, and we're in the second, and more are coming. And, a woman in her 70s in one of the counties in California got so activated that she's organized it as a peace county. She's got all kinds of activities at the county governance level all the way through. Another person said, I am going to convene something called Imagine Peace Conference on 9/11. And while people are thinking about the injury and the wounding of 9/11, we will, be celebrating a conference, a peace conference. So what we try to do is activate people to release their essential qualities, because that's the key. It's not what my design is for you to do, what I think you ought to be doing for peace. This reframing of peace around, my essential qualities, what are my gifts? Maybe it's poetry, maybe it's dancing, maybe it's wildly different than I could ever imagine doing. That's what you should be doing for peace. You should be releasing that sense of your qualities. That's where the energy will pick up, the connectivity will pick up, and you will be creatively engaged in in that culture of peace that we're trying to frame, that you'll be living out your responsibility to do something rather than pointing the finger and saying, whose rights have been violated? Why have they been violated? Who's wrong here? Who's to blame? Some of that work has to be done in time, naming the problem and understanding the problem. But we need to give our energy to the dancers of peace and to the creators of peace whose imagination we should not prescribe in any way. So the feeding of democracy and any of the movements that are healthy at the moment say, you know, democracy is pluralistic. It's about the vitality of the individual coming to bring their energy and being greeted and being welcomed and made a part of a system of energetic exchange. And it's that system of energetic exchange that we then look at from this whole system's perspective, and we say, yes, welcome economy, now dance with ecology, so that ecology and economy come together in a sustainable format. Who are the brilliant people out there with ideas and modalities to see that the future generation marries economy and ecology? Because we certainly divorced them, and that was a terrible divorce for planet Earth.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Peace Talks Radio, the series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution, with all of our episodes to hear online at peacetalksradio.com. I'm series producer Paul Ingalls, and so far we've been hearing from James O'Dea, who guides a 16-week online peace ambassador training. Now we'll talk with a couple of graduates of his program, both of whom James mentioned. One is the gentleman who put on a peace conference in California on the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 terrorists' attacks on the U.S., His name is Eric Kassem, and he says you might not expect someone with his resume to be taking a peace ambassador training. After writing for a while with the New York Times Magazine and covering politics for CBS News, he worked at the Conservative Heritage Foundation and was a speechwriter for the Reagan and First President Bush administrations.
Speechwriting is sort of a process put together by a committee. So it's like the cutting room floor, and a lot of my best soaring prose ended up on the cutting room floor. My speeches never actually were spoken verbatim until I worked for a nonprofit that was dedicated to world peace, and then the CEO would do my speeches off a teleprompter, and it was a lovely experience to hear my words actually spoken and to see applause and to get a standing ovation. So eventually it came around.
Eric Kassem, then you were drawn to the Peace Ambassador training online through the Shift Network. What was attractive about being certified as a Peace Ambassador?
Yeah, I think I just wanted to learn about peace, what it is, what it looks like, and maybe if you can do anything about it. The great thing about it was we had access to people like Arun Gandhi, you know, Mahatma Gandhi's grandson, and he would tell stories about sitting down with Mahatma Gandhi and things that they had done together. And people like Don Beck and Georgia Kelly and really great thinkers that are on the front line of peace. And the class itself was hosted, as you know, by James O'Dea, who worked for Amnesty International in their Washington, D.C. office. And he had actually been a peace worker in Rwanda and Northern Ireland and in the Middle East. So it was incredible to spend time with people that were on the front lines of peace and be able to ask them questions. And it seemed to me that they didn't want 1,000 new students of peace, that we all have more information than we know to do things differently, that what we really need to do is take action. So that they were building 1,000 new leaders of peace. And so it was based upon really getting people to step into their greatness and take action on their passions and their dreams and really reshape their destiny.
And what does that action look like for Eric Kassem?
That's a good question. Right around that time, I heard a story that changed my life. And it had to do with an act of service being an act of peace. There was a lady that I met who is a director of a K-12 school in Minnesota. Her name is Nan Peterson. And she went to Kenya because she heard there were a lot of orphans. And she told me that there's 33 million people in Kenya, but 11 million are orphans. And I thought, oh my gosh, what if 100 million American kids had lost both parents? And so immediately I wanted to hear her story, but she said they went to Kibera, which is the slum of Kenya, of Nairobi. And this little boy walked up and handed her a bundle. And he said, here's my baby sister. My father died of AIDS. My mother has died of malaria. And I'm not feeling so good myself. And when I die, they'll throw my sister into the street to die. And apparently the boys in orphanages get food, but the girls don't. They are thrown into the street. And so Nan was holding this baby going, oh my God. So she went to this girls' orphanage, and sure enough, these girls were starving to death. And they had one old half-dead cow that was giving maybe one cup of milk a day, and each girl got one teaspoon of milk a day. And Nan comes back to Minnesota, and she's going, man, we've got to do, what could we do? And she asked the students, what could we possibly do? And they were taking a class, an art class, where they were learning how to make homemade paper. So somebody got the idea, probably, the kids were anywhere from 6 years old to 17, of making paper and selling it, homemade paper, and selling it to buy a cow. So the kids made a ton of paper, and they sold all this paper. And by the time they were done, they had enough money to buy four cows and feed them for an entire year. And it was like, these are kids 6 years old doing something to save the life of somebody halfway around the world who they've never even met. And I thought, if a six-year-old could do that, what could I do? And it was a very defining moment. So it happened right at the time of the Peace Ambassador training. And I thought, my goodness, you know, I was a little embarrassed that I didn't do more. So I got together with some of the other members, the graduates of Peace Ambassadors, and we organized a peace conference. And I was pretty broke at the time. The economy has really hit my income. And so I had a garage sale, and I sold a bunch of junk, you know, from my garage that was gathering dust. And I took that money and I placed a down payment on the auditorium, the hall. It's called Wheeler Hall at UC Berkeley. And so together with my other Peace Ambassador graduates, we made this conference. We started inviting speakers, and we held it on 9/11 weekend because we knew that on that weekend, everybody would be watching TV and all they'd be seeing is the falling Twin Towers. We wanted to send out a message that we have a choice. We don't have to continue the cycle of war and violence, that there are other options. And it turned out great, and the speakers were fantastic, and it really created a magic moment. And so we got to thinking, what if we could have 100 peace conferences? You know, two per state. That would be 100, not counting international, right? So one of our projects is 100 peace conferences. And the only way it could really happen is if you make it bite-sized so that anybody could do it. So let's suppose that people want to have friends over in their living room for a potluck. That's very inexpensive. And we give them DVDs of the speakers that we would have had at a major conference. And they can watch them and talk about them and debate about them. We could take the workshops. Instead of having it all happen in a two-day conference, they could do one a month and then work on it for the next 30 days. So we could have 12 workshops. It could literally be a one-year or a 12-month peace conference. And if we had hundreds of these, it could be done in a living room or in a school or a library or even a university or a church. So that, I think, is the direction we're going next.
Eric Kasem is a former journalist and speechwriter. He calls himself a grassroots peacemaker. He's the founder of the Live Peace Institute in California. Eric Kasem, thanks for joining us on Peace Talks Radio.
Thank you, Paul.
Tyra St. John has been working with victims of perpetrators of domestic violence for many years. She lives in rural Lake County, California. Although her Alternatives to Violence project put her in the role of peacemaker of a sort, she never thought of herself as someone who could make a difference outside of her work until she, too, took the online Peace Ambassador training facilitated by James O'Dea, which, she says, challenged her to confront her own personal roadblocks to peace.
It takes a lot of courage to practice peace. It takes a huge amount of courage. There's a chicken in me. There's a rabbit that doesn't want to come out. It doesn't want to come out and be always sociable or always communication with others. I guess I'm kind of an introvert in that way. And what I learned was that I can't take the upper road all the time. I cannot go there. I have to come down from the mountaintop, you might say, and deal with my issues and with other people's issues on a more personal level.
So it's messy and difficult work sometimes.
Very messy and very difficult. When you speak your truth, it's not always fun. It's not pleasant. It's not easy to say what you really think or what you feel and still not do it in a blaming way, not to blame the other person.
Tyra St. John, you said that this program turned you into an activist. So what did that look like for you personally?
There's a lot of encouragement in the Peace Ambassador Program to help take us into teaching a large number of people about peace. And I woke up one morning and I thought suddenly nothing is going on in terms of this subject in Lake County.
And this is where you live.
That's where I live. I live in Lake County, California, a little rural county that's very poor, very rural, very beautiful, and not very well connected sometimes to the rest of the world. I felt a calling to do something. I felt a need to take a step that I don't think I would have ever taken in the past had I not been in the Peace Ambassador Program. I just decided to establish this Lake County Summer of Peace, which is, of course, a global event. It's happening everywhere. So I decided to do this, and within a month, we had the confirmation and a proclamation by our Board of Supervisors, which shocked me. I thought I was going to go in to fight for something, and they gave us an approval by 5-0. So we had suddenly had a proclamation, and we weren't doing anything yet. So it has meant a lot of work in contacting people who are seeking inner and outer peace and prosperity.
What is the unifying message that's going to really be clear to people that takes it beyond a festive summer of activities that they might be able to access at different times of the year? What's going to make it compelling and special from the standpoint of people taking a peace message back into their lives?
I think that people will understand all the components of peace better, of what actually creates peace at home and even abroad, anywhere else, even in the reds and blues throughout the United States, and how we communicate with each other and how we can listen to another point of view, whether we agree or disagree, and to have productive disagreement. And I believe that peace will have a new meaning for the general populace. Hope it does for me.
Dr. Tyra St. John is a psychotherapist, life coach, and radio host. She's also one of the chief planners of the Lake County Summer of Peace and a graduate of the Shift Network's Peace Ambassador Training. You can find links to more information about that training and our guests at our website, peacetalksradio.com. You can hear an hour-long version of this program there with much more from our guests. peacetalksradio.com is also where you can hear all of the programs in our series going back to 2003. Order CDs of most episodes, sign up for a podcast or our newsletter, and it's also where you can make a tax-deductible contribution to our nonprofit media organization that produces this program independently from your local public radio station. Please consider a donation. It really will help. For more frequent updates and inspiration, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Additional support comes from the Oppenheimer Brothers Foundation, the FNS Fund of the Santa Fe Community Foundation, Seasons Rotisserie Bar and Grill in Albuquerque, and KUNM at the University of New Mexico. Ali Adelman composed and performs our theme music. I'm Paul Ingalls. Thank you for listening to and for supporting Peace Talks Radio.